Well, Pacers fans, one of the long-time sponsors, and by long, I mean almost 3 or 4 months going on, we are a young podcast, that is true, is Draft. Draft is Tony and I's favorite way to do fantasy betting. It's way better than sites like FanDuel or DraftKings, where you're put in a giant group with thousands of people, and it's an algorithm, and people have hundreds of teams, and they can rig the system to win. Draft is almost like a fantasy draft every day. You pick 5 players, 2 guards, 2 forwards in the center. You fill a lineup. You can play with friends. You can play with other people. Usually, groups are no bigger than 5 to 10. You put $3 down, $5 down, $10 down, maybe winner take all pool, first, second, third, whatever it is. You can win an easy amount of money quickly and fast. And if you use the promo code LOPACERS, you can get a $3 free game with your first $10 down. That's $3 for your first $10 down if you use the promo code LOPACERS. Pacer fans, that means you should download the Draft app today.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Thursday, Pacer fans, and a post-Valentine's Day Locked On Pacers podcast. On today's show, I will review the Nets-Pacers game after last night's 108-103 win. Then I'll move on to some talk about the All-Star break, some programming notes. Tony and I will probably be here all week, and we'll have a special weekend edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast to discuss the All-Star game, the Rising Stars Challenge, Victor Oladipo in the dunk contest, and obviously Victor Oladipo in the actual All-Star game. Then next week, we'll be a little more sporadic. We'll have 1 or 2 pods before Friday's game. We'll probably take a couple of days off. It's a nice little time to just take a step back, relax, enjoy ourselves. So sorry for all those who are dying to listen to podcasts every day, but there'll be one at least on Monday, one on Wednesday, and one on Friday. But we might take a couple days off because we need a break as well. We've been doing this for about 3 or 4 straight months going through. But let's get to today's show. Not all that surprising, but the Pacers beat the Nets 108-103. They are now moved to 33-25 on the season, making them just 17 games away from 50 wins. I know they have to go 17-7 down the stretch for that to even be possible, but the fact that it is possible is incredible. This team has wildly surpassed their expectations. They came into the season predicted to win 31.5 games. They're already at 33 before the All-Star break. I don't know. There's almost a loss of words for how good this team is compared to what I thought, what pundits thought, what other Pacer fans thought. This team was going to be bad coming into the season, and they're clearly not. They're at least one of the teams in the probably the upper third class of the NBA, probably one of the best 10 to 15 teams in the league at least. Night in, night out, they beat bad teams consistently, and they win close games against good teams, occasionally, which is kind of what you expect of a middle-tier team. The Nets game was closer than I would personally like, but it was expected just because it's the pre-All-Star break. Some players are checked in, checked out. They're ready to go to their vacations. I think most Pacer players will get from today until Sunday off and be back for practice on Monday. So, they're checked out. They're ready to go Cabo or Cancun or wherever they're going. It's what you'd expect from guys who have been playing basketball for 5 straight months and want to take a break and go relax their family or whatever it is. But, overall, the Pacers won the game, so that's what matters. But they did not shoot very well. They were 39 of 90 from the field, which is 43%, just 1% better than actually the Nets, which is all you really needed. Some poor shooting nights were from Miles Turner, who was 2 of 8. Victor Oladipo was 9 of 24. Corey Joseph, who was 5 of 12. Bogdanovich was 5 of 11. Thad Young was 5 of 12 as well. Those were, not terrible, the 5 of 12s, 5 of 11s, but they weren't great. Al Jefferson was really the only player on the team who had a good night, I would say. He was 6 of 7 for 13 points. He continues to show off some of his old man game and sort of beat teams with a little bit of a style they don't see very often. What worries me, though, is if he continues to play so well, Nate McMillan might try to play him for minutes in the playoffs, which is probably not a good idea. I think once he gets to the playoffs, he can be exposed because he's not going to be going against the bottom of the bench guys on other teams. I think Jefferson serves a purpose of playing against bad teams to steal you minutes. You don't have to play Turner and Sabonis as much, or if they're in foul trouble, whatever it is. But most of the time, you don't want to play him in an important game because he is just too slow and he just no longer fits the way the league is going. Obviously, Victor Oladipo had the best game, 25 points, but it wasn't his greatest shooting night. He continues to kind of struggle from the three-point line, was 1-of-4, but it also continues to just put up points. He finds a way to get 25 most nights, whether it's getting the line a lot, scoring around the rim, did a nice job closing out the game, basically with a nice little layup. He finds a way to be impactful and get points even when he's 9-of-24. 9-of-24 isn't great. It's kind of reminds me of a Russell Westbrook type of stat line, but he gets 25 points, they get the win. That's all that really matters. One player I was extremely impressed with was Corey Joseph. He finally broke the shell of his slump to actually look impressive, at least, or kind of, step in a role I thought he might have been taking in the season if Collison wasn't as good as he was, and it was kind of a competition between Joseph and Collison. Collison, there was a thought that Joseph could replace Collison in the starting lineup someday. I think that's passed, but Joseph had 15 points and 11 assists. He did a nice job facilitating the offense. He played decent D. He was a +7 on the court. That was actually only the fourth highest on the team, but Bogdanović had a +20 to lead all players. But still, that's what you want to see out of a guy like him, out of a point guard who really was replacing a point guard in Darren Collison, who was probably in the top 10 of point guards this season. But, I'm impressed by Joseph. At least he got out of his little shooting slump where he was afraid to shoot. At least he took 12 shots. He wasn't afraid to put the ball up. But, a 15, 11, and 8 line is nothing to be ashamed of or nothing to scoff at. Even if it gets against the Nets, it's really impressive. Putting up 15 points, 11 assists, and 8 rebounds is really, really impressive. And another player who continues to play well, which is great. This wasn't probably his best game, obviously, over the past 2 weeks, but Bojan Bogdanović seems to have gotten over his shyness to shoot in his slump of January and most of December to be at least an above-average player on offense. And, I know there's a liability on D, but he's been what you want on offense to be an effective defender and to be able to play on the court. He was 5'11", 2 for 6 from 3 for 14. Overall, there isn't a ton of takeaways from this game. It is the last game before the All-Star break. The guys are going to get a much-needed break. We'll see Sabonis and Oladipo in this weekend's All-Star stuff with Sabonis in the Rising Challenge game. But the rest of the guys will take a nice little vacation somewhere they want to go. And it'll be good for them to kind of, recover. Hopefully they'll come out and they'll start the All-Star break the same team they were before. They have been rolling recently. They've been playing extremely well. Hopefully this break doesn't ruin that. But every team, you look around the league, I think there's a running joke that every team says they don't want the All-Star to come because they're playing too well. I mean, Toronto's won 9 of the last 10, Indiana's won 7 of the last 10, Milwaukee 8 of the last 10, Washington 7 of the last 10, Cleveland 4 in a row. All these teams are playing well, so some of them will come out of the break playing well and some won't, and I think the Pacers are the kind of team that will. They have enough veteran leadership in Jefferson and Thad Young and Darren Collison returning to sort of push this team, and then I think Depot obviously will just continue to work because that dude doesn't stop working. I'm going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to talk more about Victor Oladipo. For the 8th straight year, the Pacers will have a player in the All-Star game. Third different guy in the game, but still, they'll be doing that for the 8th straight season. And this year, Victor Oladipo following the footsteps of 5 years of Paul George and 1 year of Roy Hibbert. Roy Hibbert, I think, made it there in 2014 as well. So maybe 2 times Roy Hibbert made it, but for the 7th straight year, Pacers will have an All-Star, which is incredible continuity, especially considering the turnover of this roster in 2014 and now this past offseason to continue to put together good seasons to get a player to the All-Star game is awesome. I think right now Victor Oladipo might be the number 4-5 guard in the East ranking-wise. Tony did this on our Tuesday podcast, but I want to go over it again. If you look at the Eastern Conference right now, there are probably 5 surefire guards that would be in this talk for top 5. So you're looking at out of Washington, John Wall, Bradley Beal, DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, Kyrie Irving. Right now, Gordon Hayward is not playing. He might play shooting guard. He might play small forward. That's a discussion for another day when he gets healthy. Those 5 guys are probably with Depot in this kind of top 6 of elite guards in the Eastern Conference. I would have to say almost Depot this season has been better than both Lowry and Wall. Wall has been hurt mostly, inconsistency with injuries. It happens. I think Wall on his best day might be better than Depot. And then Lowry had a struggling start. He's played better. That team's been carried by DeMar DeRozan. I think then there's kind of this other echelon class in that top six of DeRozan, Beal, Kyrie, and then there's Depot right in that four slot, shredding the line between the Lowrys and the Beals of the world, because those four guys, at least those three guys at the top plus Depot, are guys that I think are leading their teams to wins in a way the other two guards aren't, in the way no other guard in the East is doing it. You know, Kemba is a really good point guard, but he is not translating to a playoff success or the chance to play in the playoffs versus, you know, Bradley Beal with Wall out has played incredible. Kyrie, obviously, night after night out is leading the Celtics. They've got 40 wins almost, and same with the Raptors and DeRozan. Those four guys are sort of this elite class, and what separates, I think, those three guys from Depot right now is they've all three had playoff success. They've been impressive. We've seen them succeed at the highest levels in the biggest moments. I know Kyrie's the only one to play in the finals, but we've seen DeRozan lead a team or be on a team that got to the conference finals. Beal last season was incredible in the playoffs. You know, those guys are kind of this next level, which Depot is almost there, and he's really just one good playoff run, you know, one unexpected playoff series win where he puts up 25 the entire series from being in their class. You know, I think Kyrie has the benefit of being able to play with LeBron these past couple years, so it pushed him into the spotlight more. You know, I think if any of those guys had played with LeBron, they also would be considered better than maybe they actually are, because you just get the spotlight shone on you. But Kyrie is incredible, and if the Celtics get to the Eastern Conference Finals, it's going to be on the back of him. Same with the Raptors, same with the Wizards, and same with the Pacers, really. You know, I do think, you know, there's the Cavs are probably going to knock off one of those teams, so I don't think any of those two guys will play each other in the conference finals. I think the conference finals is the Cavs and somebody else. But it's something to look at, at least. That if Depot makes, you know, wins one playoff series and takes another one to six and looks incredibly well, he all of a sudden has kind of probably pushed himself into that upper echelon of Eastern Conference point guards, which all of a sudden pushes the Pacers into this semi-free agent destination. What I mean by that is they are never going to get the big name all-star straight from free agency, since I want to go there. But they are a possibility with a trade. They do have a couple young assets in Turner and Sabonis. I don't think Turner is ever going to be traded, but Sabonis could be flipped at some point if they see a possibility of getting a really good small forward for the right kind of superstar. But also, because cap space is now becoming more valuable, the Pacers have a ton of it all of a sudden, they could use that kind of money to overpay for a mid-level star, you know, not maybe a top 25 player, but maybe a top 50 player, or get somebody who's young who could become a top 25 player. They have this cap space to do that, which make it interesting, because it might make role players want to come play here with Depot. If he has a good playoff run, it might change this, you know, trajectory of the team. If Turner keeps developing and actually becomes a top 25 player with Depot, the Pacers also become a really attractive destination for teams and for players who want to come to the Eastern Conference because it's easier to play in, want to compete, and the Pacers are also competing every year if they've got two top 25 players. So it's something to look towards. If they can kind of have a really good playoff run here, and really good really could just mean even going to seven in the first round series, but one kind of nice playoff. You know, we saw that with Paul George. He took the team to seven, the Raptors seven games two seasons ago, and sort of pushed himself into this whole new stratosphere. Oh, he's a superstar. Just that kind of series would push the Pacers ahead of their timeline to rebuild, put them in this idea, oh, the mid-leveling Frazier might want to come in, which could help improve the team. We saw when you bring in guys like Bogdanović and Collison, who are guys that are in that middle-tier free agency, all of a sudden this team took another level because Collison's been playing amazing. Bogdanović, when he's on fire, is, you know, impossible to guard, and it sort of pushes them into that next level. So something to look at. If the Pacers can get to 45 to 48 wins, sneak into a 4-5 seed matchup, maybe with the Wizards, the Bucks, they really have a shot at winning that. And then, you know, if they win that, can they up to the Raptors or the Celtics? You know, I think the Raptors will be the one overall seed ultimately. I think they're a better team. I think they'll be harder to beat. I think I'm a Pacers fan. I'd rather actually play the Celtics, but I'd rather play in the 4-5 game to start, because that's an easier first-round matchup than any of those other three teams. The Cavs, I think, are going to be on a hell-bent path to the finals. And you could play Boston in the first round, but I don't think you want to. I think you're more likely to upset Boston in the second round than you are the first round, because they are a young team, but they have some veteran experience in Kyrie and Al Horford. So something to look at. If the Pacers can make a real run, it changes the way people view this Pacers team. That's all I got for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. You can follow Tony at TEastNBA, me at FriedmanAdam5. You can check out everything I write on the Pacers at IndyCornrows.com. I just wrote an article about Miles Turner that I'm sure, if you listen to this podcast, you know my opinions on it, so I had to put it down on paper so people could really see it. But that's all I got, so have a great rest of your day.